From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Annette John Hall.
The mumps outbreak at Temple University started just before spring break.
We had the first confirmed case on Thursday, February 28th.
Mark Denis, Director of Student and Employee Health, says a few kids showed up saying they felt kind of like they had the flu, but they had other symptoms.
It's really that swelling above the jawline between the ear and around the salivary glands is what sets it apart. As soon as we got the confirmed case, we got an email out within a couple hours to the entire Temple community, really trying to educate them on what the signs and symptoms of the mumps are, and that if they had those signs and symptoms, what were they to do?
Temple told students they should see a doctor if they started to feel sick. Like the CDC suggests, they started offering vaccines on campus. But as spring break continued, more reports of the mumps started to pop up.
Meanwhile, at Temple University, there's concern today over the mumps. Several students have come down with that virus, and school officials are worried that more may get sick if they're not vaccinated.
At least 10 cases of mumps.
At least 11 students.
16 cases confirmed. 23 confirmed cases of mumps.
University officials report there are now at least 28 cases of the virus.
As of Friday morning, 11 people have tested positive for mumps at Temple, and 36 more people are showing symptoms and probably have the disease.
Luckily, nobody has gotten seriously ill or had any bad complications.
But why did this happen at Temple? And why would there be an outbreak of an illness that we have a vaccine for?
Today on The Why, down in the mumps.
Paul Offit is a doctor at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where he runs the Vaccine Education Center. He joined us to talk about mumps and the mumps vaccine, which was invented in the 1960s.
Dr. Maurice Hilleman, in 1963, his daughter walked into his bedroom that night.
She says, "Look, Dad. Oh, my God. She had a throat like this."
He said, "Daddy, my throat hurts." And he looked at her and said, "Oh, my gosh, you've got the mumps."
"Go up to the lab. It was about 1 in the morning. Got specimen collecting things. Brought them back. Took throat swabs."
"Came back, swabbed the inside of her mouth."
"Took them back to the lab and froze them. So now I had specimens out of Geraldine, my daughter. We isolated the virus."
And then over the period of the next 4 years, he weakened that virus so that it could induce an immune response and protect the person without causing disease. One of the first people to get that vaccine was Maurice's younger daughter.
"My other daughter, Kirsten,"
i.e. Gerald's sister,
"was about 1 year old at the time that we had the vaccine coming along, not yet licensed, but fairly far along."
"Got the vaccine and was protected."
"And a picture was taken of Gerald convincing her sister that she ought to take the vaccine."
"So typically when children get a virus, they bring it back and infect everybody in the family. In this case, this Gerald Lynn got the virus and then ultimately was able to make her father was able to make a vaccine that protected her sister."
"Here was a baby being protected by a virus from her sister."
"Which pretty much never happens."
"And this has been unique in that history of medicine, I think. It was a big human interest story."
And so that vaccine then was licensed and recommended for use in all children in 1967.
The mumps vaccine was eventually rolled into a vaccine that vaccinates against several diseases called MMR. When did that come about?
Right. So the measles vaccine was actually invented initially in 1963, the mumps vaccine in 1967, the rubella or German measles vaccine in 1969. That was then all rolled into the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine in 1971.
So why is this outbreak happening on a college campus?
It used to be, when this vaccine was first recommended in 1967, that it was given at children at the ages of 12 to 15 months. And what you found was that about 10 years after that first dose, immunity faded. So we started to see children at the age of 10, 11, 12 get mumps. Then there was a second dose recommendation in 1991 for the vaccine to be given also at 4 to 6 years of age. Still, immunity faded 10 years after that dose. So you were seeing that the disease now in late adolescence, early adulthood, which is why now when we see outbreaks, we do see them on college campuses. Now, that said, before there was a vaccine, we'd have 200,000 cases of mumps every year. Typically, we had just a few hundred, although last year was a difficult year with 6,000 cases.
Why does the mumps vaccine typically lose effectiveness after 10 to 12 years?
You know, when you make these vaccines, like the measles or mumps or rubella vaccine, which are all the same way, which is to say they are live, weakened forms of a natural virus. When you do that, you weaken it in the laboratory, usually by passing it in non-human cells. And so you're introducing a series of genetic changes that makes it such that the virus reproduces itself in the human body much less efficiently.
This is Baby Jack. Vaccines help Jack fight infections by introducing a small number of antigens into his body,
but still efficiently enough to induce an immune response.
Antigens are parts of germs that cause Jack's immune system to go to work. After Jack gets a vaccine, his immune system will remember the vaccine antigen and attack that germ if it ever invades his body again.
There's not a clear formula for doing that. It's not like there's a book that says how to do that. And so it's largely trial and error. With the measles and rubella vaccines, as it turns out, we were able to induce very high frequencies of memory immune cells so that immunity was essentially lifelong. With mumps, that wasn't true.
And Jack may need more doses later to best protect him. That's why Jack's parents are following the recommended immunization schedule.
Is science working on a vaccine for mumps where it doesn't fade after 10 or 12 years, that it will last for the duration?
No. I think, you know, it's vaccines as a general rule are not big money makers. That's why it is that you see currently only four companies that make vaccines for America's children. This is something you give once or a few times in your lifetime. So there's frankly little financial incentive for a company to compete against itself. I mean, only one company makes the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine for America's children. To make a new vaccine would probably be at least $1 billion+ investment. And I don't see any real financial impetus to do that, no.
So we are using the same mumps vaccine that Maurice Hilleman created in the 60s?
That's right. Same one since 1967.
You know, we talked to kids at Temple, and, you know, we thought that they would be very anxious about hearing about something like this, but it didn't seem like they were that worried about it.
You know, I think it can happen anywhere. It hasn't really been a big thing for me. I think it's just something that'll slide by pretty quick here. I know people just got to watch out, stay, wash your hands, do everything like that, just stay healthy.
I think Temple has taken the steps, that they can possibly take at this point.
Thankfully, I don't have it, none of my friends do, so that's good. I feel like I should be fine.
How do you feel about that? Do you think that they should be taking this a little bit more seriously?
Yes. I mean, typically mumps just causes swelling of these parotid glands, which are these glands located at the angle of the jaw that help you digest food. And, you know, children look like chipmunks and it's cute and you get better. But sometimes, especially for someone who's postpubertal, which is true of these people on college campuses, the virus can infect the testes, causing something called orchitis, which can result in sterility, or it can infect the ovaries, something called oophoritis, which can cause sterility. So it's a virus to be taken seriously.
So we called around to a number of schools in the area, and most of them do have some kind of requirement that students be vaccinated. Temple, apparently, before this outbreak, didn't have that requirement, just a recommendation. What does the CDC recommend when it comes to vaccines?
Right. So right now, the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, recommends that whenever there's an outbreak, that we give the MMR vaccine on campus. I think we're moving to a third dose recommendation for people that enter college, because especially with these outbreaks now of mumps, we need to take that disease more seriously.
When we hear about vaccines in the news, at least in recent years, it's often about parents choosing not to vaccinate their kids. Is there any way that is related to an outbreak on a college campus?
Yes, although not typically mumps. I mean, if you looked at last year when we had 6,000 cases, about 75% of those people who got mumps were vaccinated. So 25% weren't. So they were exposed unnecessarily. It's when you see when herd immunity or community immunity erodes or fades, the first virus to come back is always measles. It's the most contagious of the viruses and bacteria that we protect against. And so that's what you see. And that's what you're seeing. I mean, we had a huge, you know, outbreak in California that started in 2014, 2015, spread to 25 states. Now we have outbreaks in Texas and Oregon and Washington State and New York State and New Jersey. And that's because people are choosing not to vaccinate, choosing to put their children in harm's way.
If you were running college campuses, Dr. Offit, would you make it a requirement that you can't come to school if you're not vaccinated?
Yes, for a couple reasons. One, because it puts you in the safest position possible. Two, it puts those with whom you come in contact in the safest position possible. And remember, not everybody can be vaccinated. I mean, some people are getting chemotherapy for their cancers, or they're getting immune suppressive therapies for their chronic diseases. They depend on those around them to protect them, and they are especially vulnerable when these outbreaks occur. So I think it's a responsibility you have not only for yourself but for others.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Should the conversation about vaccination be more centered on the schedule of vaccines?
Well, I think when people come to college campuses, like all of us when we were teenagers or young adults, we pretty much consider ourselves invulnerable, one, and two, assume that we've gotten everything that we've needed in the past. That's not always true. One, we're not invulnerable. And two, there are sometimes children who haven't been given vaccines according to the schedule recommended by the CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics. So I do think you're right. I think that the incoming student should be aware of what they've gotten or what they haven't gotten to know what their vulnerabilities might be and make sure that they are up to date on their vaccines.
That still doesn't mean they'll do it, though.
Yeah. Dr. Offit, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks, Dr. Offit.
Thank you.
So, Annette, do you feel like you have a good handle on the importance of vaccines?
I think so.
Because if you don't, you should probably listen to this.
What's that Band-Aid for?
Oh, this? My doctor gave me shots.
Did it hurt?
Nah, it was all right.
What was it for?
Well, let me tell you about it.
All right, everyone. Listen up. I heard he raps good.
First off, I don't rap good. I rap well. And the shots I took are for kids 11 to 12. Yell, scream, cry. No.
That explains it, right?
Yeah.
The Y is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall and Alex Stern. The interview with Dr. Maurice Hilleman came from the College of Physicians of Philadelphia.
Oh, I'm still in the groove. We'll be back tomorrow.
Preteens, get your shots.